I teach a lot of variety of classes in sort of constitutional and political history. And one of the activities we would do with the students is have a mock constitutional convention. And we got a little bit of money to sort of decorate a room to kind of make it look like the one in Philadelphia where the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution were signed. We had green tablecloths and little inkwells with little quill pens in them and some parchment paper. And it was a really exciting event. I was surprised at how enthusiastic the students were. They put themselves in character. They would often thump on the table as a sign of appreciation for one of their colleagues speaking, and it was really neat. So I started to think, you know, it would be great to have a room that looked closer to the one in Philadelphia than the haphazard one we had made out of tablecloths here on campus. And as I got to thinking about it and talking with people around town who were supportive of the idea, it kind of grew from a room to a building. And the natural inspiration for the building we're going to build here on campus is the original in Philadelphia, what is now called Independence Hall.
Welcome to Think About It, a podcast from Houston Baptist University here in Houston, Texas. At HBU, we empower our students so their beliefs can fuel their lives. From our competitive nursing programs to our world-renowned theologians, we prepare our students to thrive at the university level and beyond. And now we join our host, Dr. Jerry Johnston, with today's guest.
Podcast 82 features Dr. Chris Hammonds, the program coordinator for government and a professor of government at Houston Baptist University. Dr. Hammonds is eager to ensure the Constitution and American founding principles are taught to the next generation. He's the director of the Morris Family Center for Law and Liberty. Thanks to a gift by University Founding Father Stuart Morris, a replica of Independence Hall will be constructed on HBU's campus here in Houston, Texas. The project will further the center's educational and community engagement objectives, and it has long been a dream of this fine man, Chris Hammonds. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for the invitation.
Well, you have done so well sharing the vision and pursuing the vision. Mm-hmm. You've spoken everywhere about the Constitution. Mm-hmm. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's a labor of love, and I've been spoken all over town, really all over Houston and Texas, about our nation's founding, the founding principles behind the Constitution. There are a number of long-standing civic organizations in town, like the Daughters of the American Republic, or American Revolution, the Sons of the American Revolution, people who trace their ancestry back to the Mayflower Pilgrims. And every time I have an opportunity to step in front of an organization like that, I tell them about what we're doing here at HBU and about what is now the Morris Family Center for Law and Liberty. And they're very supportive of that endeavor.
Well, we're going to show a picture right now on the screen while we're talking of the depiction of the building mm-hmm. to be built. Mm-hmm. But we want you to tell us about Independence Hall, the building itself historically, sure. and then what will be built sure. in replica here on off Southwest Freeway mm-hmm. in Fondren in Houston, Texas.
Yeah, well, the sort of idea or inspiration for the building started probably about 10 or 15 years ago. I teach a lot of variety of classes in sort of constitutional and political history. And one of the activities we would do with the students is have a mock constitutional convention. And we got a little bit of money to sort of decorate a room to kind of make it look like the one in Philadelphia where the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution were signed. We had green tablecloths and little inkwells with little quill pens in them and some parchment paper. And it was a really exciting event. I was surprised at how enthusiastic the students were. They put themselves in character. They would often thump on the table as a sign of appreciation for one of their colleagues speaking, and it was really neat. So I started to think, you know, it would be great to have a room that looked closer to the one in Philadelphia than the haphazard one we had made out of tablecloths here on campus. And as I got to thinking about it and talking with people around town who were supportive of the idea, it kind of grew from a room to a building. And the natural inspiration for the building we're going to build here on campus is the original in Philadelphia, what is now called Independence Hall. At the time was called the Philadelphia State House. And that's the famous building. Everybody recognizes it. It's the one right in the center of Philly,
right,
where the Liberty Bell is nearby. The Declaration was signed there. The Constitution was drafted there. And we're going to use that building as an inspiration or model for the one we build here on campus. It'll have to be some modifications, so it can't be 100% exact because there's ADA compliance issues, electrical and plumbing and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
But we want to make the interior of that building in particular, that famous signing room, as exact as we can. And the goal will be to have our students take classes in history, in government and law and criminal justice and economics, in a room that makes you feel like you're in the 18th century, in the very room where the Declaration and the Constitution were created. And they can sit in the Thomas Jefferson chair or the James Madison chair and really feel like they've been transported back in time and space where the American story really starts. That's part of the vision and the utility of
the building. And the feel of the building, mm-hmm, will be just like Independence Hall.
Yeah, we'll make the exterior look as close as we can get it to the one in Philadelphia, so that when you pull up, you clearly recognize it's Independence Hall.
Sure.
And it becomes an iconic symbol of really the values that we've always taught here at HBU, that the principles on which our nation is founded are worth preserving. And so it's sort of an outward and visible symbol of something we've been doing for a long time, but it makes a little bit more of a statement, I think.
Yeah. Well, what did you think when this $10 million plus, mm-hmm, gift finally came in? I mean, you had to have been elated.
Yeah, oh yes, very much so.
Did your wife have to peel you off the ceiling or what?
No, well, yeah, to tell you the truth, I sort of kept it to myself for a while because it was probably a little bit of disbelief,
yeah,
that it was all coming
I've
together.
I've had that happen.
Yeah, and this is an idea that we've been bouncing around probably since 2009.
Uh-huh.
And we've talked to people all over the city about it. There was universal support. Everybody we talked to said this is a wonderful idea. It'll be the only facility like this in the nation, which is a teaching theater. It's not a museum.
Oh, so explain that, a teaching theater.
I think the first reaction people have is, oh, you're going to build a replica of Independence Hall to have a museum, uh-huh, dedicated to the American founding. And that's exactly not what we're doing.
Okay. Right?
This will be an active working classroom building,
wow,
that's used for classes. And students will come and go. They'll take classes in it. They can hang out in the lobby. And really part of the objective is to make this building accessible to school kids through all over Texas, to come here to Houston so we can put them in that classroom, like the signing room, put little costumes on them and little tricorn hats, and tell them the story of America while they're sitting in that room. So the school buses can line up and I'll hope they'll come. So it'll be an active facility and not a museum. But as we talked to people all over town, they thought it was a wonderful idea. We had some early success very quickly. And Dr. Stuart Morris, who is one of our founders of the university, is a great patriot, you know, served his country during the Second World War.
Yes.
He loves American history. He and his wife, Joella, have supported organizations across America dedicated to preserving our nation's history. And so he was very helpful in putting us in contact with people who would be supportive of the project. But I think as we worked on it over the years, he became more and more inspired by what we were trying to do, and eventually decided that he would like to make that gift toward the construction of the building. So, you know, once again, we are so thankful to him and his family support. It's through their family foundation. And I just think there's a lot of beautiful symmetry there that he was involved, mm-hmm, at the beginning of the university, and here, as he approaches his 99th birthday, he's still constructing and helping build out buildings on HBU.
If they can only say that about you and I when we're 99.
That's exactly right. So I hope we all get to that age. Right? He's an amazing guy.
And oh,
one of the things I really admire about him as I got to know him over the past few years, we spent some time together shooting the breeze about history and HBU, and I would try to pick his brain about his service during the Second World War or growing up in Houston in the 30s and 40s. And he would rarely talk about those things. He would usually shake his head and turn right around and say, what can we do to make HBU better tomorrow than it is today? And he's always looking to the future. And I think, you know, for a guy who's 99, it's an amazing positive attitude that tomorrow still holds hope and not to sort of, you know, live in the past.
So, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you know, again, just congratulations.
Thank
and
you.
And you kept fanning the flame, and that's what it takes. And God uses people to make things happen. I want to show some footage right now of the signing recently mm-hmm. there in Hammond, or in the Morris Cultural Arts lobby. Mm-hmm. And I thought the word, I listened carefully to what you said, mm-hmm. what Dr. Sloan said, and what Mr. Morris said. Mm-hmm. And I thought they were very poignant words. Mm-hmm. We're going to share those words later through our Pillars magazine, but could you just replicate a little bit of what
yeah,
you said?
Sure. And this, you would assume that colleges across the nation would have an obligation or a mission to teach young people not only American history, but the principles on which our nation was founded. And sadly, that's almost sort of countercultural these days.
Mm-hmm.
Most colleges don't require a basic American history class like you and I took that kind of starts with the Pilgrims and ends with,
right.
Seems like they never get past World War II, but that's kind of the ending point.
Right.
At a lot of schools, you can take any old elective in history to meet your sort of cafeteria plan requirements. And even here in the state of Texas and right here in the city of Houston, there are universities where classes on things like the history of baseball, or the politics of Hollywood, those count as your American history classes. And as a result of that, we have a whole generation of kids who are really growing up ignorant of their own nation's history.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no conception of the principles on which our nation was based.
Mm-hmm.
So we're about one of about three or four schools in the nation that actually makes it part of our mission that by the time students graduate from here, they should understand American history and the principles of our country. And in the freshman government classes that I teach, it's probably the worst kept secret on campus, but we read the Constitution, and by the end of the course, they will have to replicate the outline of the Constitution by memory, an article and section number, the whole thing with all the amendments in order to pass the class.
Fantastic.
And it's a little bit like making them eat their broccoli. You know, they growl sometimes when they're doing it, but they almost are always successful. And I'll run into them a year or two later on campus, and they show some appreciation for what they've learned because they realize how important it is. So that's our mission. We're really dedicated to making sure that this generation of kids understands what previous generations sort of took as a given, that there are principles that our country was founded on, and those principles are important not just for historical purposes, but to their future as well.
Yeah, no question about it. You know, I just took my wife and our two daughters to Dachau
mm-hmm.
outside of Munich.
Yeah.
Because her mother was shipped on cattle cars under Adolf Hitler, mm-hmm. and her mother's kind of in her final days. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just thought, how many kids don't even know
right.
about, you know, because those American GIs, mm-hmm. not to get off point here, mm-hmm. but Dachau is a very historic city mm-hmm. right near
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
They made all the people living in those towns nearby, mm-hmm. our American GIs, march
right.
through that concentration camp after
right.
it was liberated.
Mm-hmm.
And like Birkenau and all,
yeah.
and Auschwitz, I mean, there were communities. And of course, as you know, many corporations were complicit to, you know, that death camp. And I thought about young people in our country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's tragic if they don't know our history, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, the visual is very powerful, which is why they rounded up all those German citizens and took them to those camps. Otherwise, they would not believe it.
Exactly.
You literally see it with your own eyes. And it's a little bit similar. You know, this generation of students, we call the millennials.
Yes.
They're very visually oriented. It's a generation that has grown up in a digital world where on your phone you can watch videos at demand. And I think that was part of the inspiration for having a building that puts students in that facility to make you feel like you're there,
mm-hmm.
that the visual will have some impact on them. But we've done this in other ways as well. One of the things the past 3 years I've done is to take a group of students to historic sites in America to teach them the story of America in the cities where they happen. So 2 years ago, we went to Boston. This last year, we went to Colonial Williamsburg.
Mm.
And my favorite day on the trip, we replicated the march of the British out of Boston out to Lexington and Concord. It's about
mm-hmm.
16 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So we got up early and we started walking, and there were some complaints. You know, we mm-hmm. say, look, the British did it, we can make it too. And they were a little bit like my children in the sense that about every 5 miles they would start to whine, and we'd make a little break for cookies and ice cream and get some sugar in them, and they'd start marching again for another 5 miles. But as we're walking through the battle road where that Battle of Lexington and Concord happened, you know, the shot heard around the world, there are little markers all along the path, and they would say, you know, British soldier fell here April 19th, 1775, and you keep running into these. And I remember a student stopped, and he's looking at one, and there's sort of a long pause. And I walked over, and I said, what do you think? And he says to me, you mean this really happened? Right? And it's a little bit like everything we tell them in the classroom, they take with a grain of salt, right? Like this is fictive, or we're just making it up.
Mm-hmm.
Until they're in that space and they can see for their own eyes that, you know, this is where these events happen, and then it sort of all comes home to them. And I'm a firm believer that most students will forget a lot of what we teach them down the line, all the facts and dates and names. It's just human nature. But if you can inspire them to have some appreciation for these things, that'll stay with people for a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why these trips, these visual elements are so important. And I'm even considering, I like classes organized around text and reading, but I'm even considering developing a class just around film and the concept of liberty. I mean, you mentioned World War II, the concentration camps. A lot of these students have never seen things like Saving Private Ryan or Schindler's List.
Mm-hmm.
Those things would have a tremendous impact on these students.
No question.
You know, so it's a different generation, and we sort of have to adapt how we teach to that generation.
We do, and that scripture, remove not the ancient landmarks, mm-hmm. certainly has a patriotic mm-hmm. sense
sure.
with the United States of America.
Right.
Last Christmas, we were at Normandy, and that to get the proximity of Utah Beach and Omaha Beach by standing on there, and then to know that 10,000 guys died
right.
there, there's something different about standing in a place.
That's exactly right.
You know, because and of course they filmed Saving Private Ryan there.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly true. And I remember years ago I was talking at my church with the pastor, and he was says, you're a teacher, is that your gift? And I said, I don't know. And he said, he was sort of a history buff, and he says, explain to me, do you know anything about Gettysburg? I said, sure. He says, explain to me Gettysburg. So I went on, sort of off-the-cuff lecture for 4 or 5 minutes, and he stops, and he goes, I know what your gift is. He says, you have the odd ability to remove yourself from time and space and put yourself in that position. He says, you didn't really give me any of the facts or the narrative of what was going on at Gettysburg. He says, you described the wheat and the heat and the smell of the gunpowder and the sweat, you know, getting in your eyes. And he says, it's like you're there. And that's the way I feel when I go to these historic spots.
Yes.
I'm closer to the original people than I can ever get.
Yes.
The only thing that separates me is time. And it's a little bit like you can almost see the ghost around you.
Yes.
I mean, there were people
yes.
you know, firing and climbing up the hill and dying on the beach next to you. And it's an eerie feeling, but that's what I hope the students take with them. And I think that's why I feel so passionately about this building project, is to bring some of that from Philadelphia to Houston.
Well, and I have no doubt, Dr. Hammonds, that building is going to draw thousands mm-hmm. of students from these school districts.
Mm-hmm. I hope so.
Because there won't be anything like it.
That's right.
And, you know, I mean, there are people that, you know, they don't really understand HBU till they get on its mm-hmm. campus.
That's right.
And so, wow, you know, what a huge, huge success, and mm-hmm. so grateful. Now, I've heard about these talks you give,
mm-hmm.
and they're very popular.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about them.
I speak on a variety of topics all over town, and probably George Washington is the most requested. There are a lot of...
Do you act like George Washington?
No, I don't dress up in character, although my kids accuse me of doing that when I leave the house. So,
well, my kids accuse me of all kinds of things,
yeah,
but
that's
go
right.
ahead.
And, no, I try to keep it academic, and I like that the costume, the clothing from that time period,
yeah.
but I think I'd come across as goofy, you know, in a hat and costume. But I will speak to civics groups all over the city, Sons and Daughters of the American Revolution, the descendants of the Mayflower Pilgrims, the Jamestown Society. Usually they want to hear something about the American founding. Probably the two most popular topics are George Washington or the Declaration of Independence. And I think those two topics resonate with Americans as sort of there's a certain comfort in talking about sort of the elements that are there in our nation's founding.
Mm-hmm.
They're familiar to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And when I give those talks, I try not to sort of bore people with academic, the dates, the details, or academic analysis. Really what I want to do is tell a good story, right? This is, these are why these things are important. And there's so many great stories in American history, particularly from that founding period, mm-hmm. that you can't help but get excited when you're hearing them, and I get excited when I tell them, and I hope that that comes across. I have tremendous admiration for Washington. I tell my students that he is really my hero in a lot of ways, and they think that's corny, to, first of all, to have a hero, and second of all, that it's George Washington. Yeah, but here's a guy who, he really put everything on the line.
Yeah.
And he, there was a tremendous physical sacrifice just in terms of the toll it took on him. He, during the entirety of the Revolutionary War, he was home once during that time period, back to Mount Vernon. The toll on his health, the risk to his life, the privation and expense of being away from the war. You know, he didn't have to do any of this, but he did it because he believed in the cause. And I find that tremendously admirable, mm-hmm. That you would do that for the hope of creating a better life for future generations of people that you don't even know. You know, there were plenty of people who were sort of the sunshine patriots, as they called them, that when the going got tough, they hightailed it out.
Yeah.
But you know, Washington wasn't one of those people.
Now,
you know?
Did he die due to bloodletting? That, mm-hmm. Was that true?
Yeah, he was out. He died in 1799, I think in December. So it's always interesting to me that he's a man of the 18th century. He never saw the 19th century.
Yeah.
And he was out sort of tending his farm, his plantation, as he would often do, riding his horse in sort of a blinding winter rainstorm. The elements never bothered him throughout all his life. I mean, this is a guy who fell into freezing lakes, who lived in the snow, slept under trees, but maybe with his advanced age, and in this case, he developed some sort of cold or inflammation in his throat. And I'm not sure what the clinical name of that condition is, but in essence, he sort of wound up asphyxiating.
Mm-hmm.
And the medical practice of the time, anytime they had some sort of ailment, was they would bleed people.
They would
call it desanguination, right? And the idea was they would cut the veins, they would bleed you. The theory was that you had bad blood in you, which is where we get the term, right? You got bad blood. And if they get the bad blood out, then the good blood would replenish it and you would be better. So the bleeding probably didn't kill him, but it probably didn't help at all,
yeah,
right?
Just
weakened him physically. And he died in late December of 1799. Was it for the history books, right?
Well, now, what about the Gettysburg Address? Yeah. Have you given that?
Yeah, the Gettysburg Address, when we study our, I have a class where we just study our nation's founding documents, and I consider there are really four of them. The first three the students always get, because we have the Declaration of Independence, and we'll spend a lot of time on it, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
And then we kind of hold out for the fourth one, and students are always sort of guessing, but in my opinion, it's the Gettysburg Address.
Mm-hmm.
It's a short little document that was delivered by Lincoln in the field of Gettysburg. This is in November of 1863, I believe is the date. So it's a little bit after the Battle of Gettysburg. And Lincoln has shown up to commemorate basically a mass grave or burial of all the soldiers who died the summer before. And ironically, he's actually there as an afterthought for the commemoration of this mm-hmm. cemetery. The lead speaker is the Secretary of State, Edward Everett, I believe is his name.
Mm-hmm.
And he was brought in to give the keynote address. And in those days, before television and radio, keynote usually meant 2 or 3 hour address. Right?
Yeah.
So he relives the whole Battle of Gettysburg in this 3 hour glorious sort of, you know, oration. And the crowd thinks it's wonderful, great speaker. He was the most renowned speaker at the time. So Lincoln gets up to give the speech and has prepared an address on the back of a napkin, the theory goes, or a piece of paper on the way in from D.C., and speaks for about 2 minutes. And it's the famous address around 47 years ago. And he is so brief in his address that the photographer is actually taking his time prepping the camera. And when he realizes that Lincoln is stepping down, he flashes the bulb, but Lincoln's already halfway down the podium. So really what we have is a picture of the top of Lincoln's head coming off the podium. And the audience didn't really applaud. I mean, they thought maybe Lincoln had gotten nervous or he had forgotten. They just sort of a smattering of applause. And Lincoln goes and sits down next to Edward Everett and complains that, he says, that I didn't really do a very good job in that speech. I think his exact words are, he says, that speech won't scowl, which is an old farmer reference to when you plow a field, the plow scowls the dirt. And he's in essence saying, I don't think any of that worked, right? The audience didn't buy it. And Edward realizes what Lincoln was trying to do in this speech, and Edward says, you know, you did in 2 minutes what it took me 2 hours to say. Mm-hmm. And that is to sort of encapsulate not only the cause and mission of the Civil War, but really the whole American experiment. And what Lincoln does in the Gettysburg Address is he hearkens back to the Declaration of Independence by not only saying that this was a nation conceived in liberty, but then he adds this second element, right, but dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. And that concept of equality is really sort of missing from the Constitution. It's there in the Declaration, but it's sort of missing from the Constitution. And Lincoln brings it back as the central thesis of sort of the Civil War. This is a fight for the equality of man. And when he does that, it makes the American Revolution, or the American Civil War, less about revolution than about this sort of moral battle for equality of human beings and sort of an ultimatum on the slavery issue. And you know, really sort of what makes this the North have a moral cause or a moral crusade to continue to fight. There were actually people in the North at the time who were saying, just let the South go. I mean, it's not worth the bloodshed. Wow. Until Lincoln delivers that address and it becomes a crusade. Yeah.
Well, we are captivated by Dr. Chris Hammonds, Program Coordinator for Government, Professor of Government, and he is the director of the Morris Family Center for Law and Liberty. And we want to show this picture again of an upcoming incredible replica of Independence Hall that will be built on Houston Baptist University's campus on Southwest Freeway in Fondren, a site that you're going to want to come to and you're going to want to tell everybody you know. And I predict it's going to be quite regarded, mm-hmm. highly regarded.
I hope so.
You know, this John Tyler on your team, mm-hmm. he's got a powerful pen. Boy, my goodness.
We do. We have some good folks in the Department of Law and Society, we call it. Dr. Tyler is a great friend. He's sort of the triple threat. He has a law degree, a PhD, and a wicked sense of humor. We've got Dr. Scott Robinson, who joins us from a school in Tennessee. And his expertise is actually on the Second Amendment, which is always a topical.
Really? We'll have to engage his pen, too.
And then recently added is Dr. Shannon Holzer, who does a lot of religious liberty issues from both a legal and sort of philosophical perspective. So it's a very good team there, and it fits the mission of the center.
And exactly. I would be amiss to not tell you how much we've appreciated the pieces you've contributed to the Pillars magazine.
Sure. I'm glad to do it.
Yeah. Chris Hammonds, Dr. Chris Hammonds, a great gift to Houston Baptist University, and we're so thrilled. We want you to learn more at hbu.edu/humanities, hbulaw.org. Check out both of those websites and learn all about how you can be a part and how you can help support. I'm sure there's going to be additional financial needs as the center develops. Yeah. All the needs aren't over.
That's right. I mean, this building is really sort of the anchor for hopefully a larger facility that'll have added classroom space, lecture halls. We want this to be a place where school kids can come to visit, but also sort of a civic center for area civics organizations, where politicians can come and start their political career or come and end their political career, but you know, make it a sort of a destination for Houstonians and really throughout the state of Texas. There are schools throughout Texas that put their school kids on a school bus and send them to the Alamo every year.
Exactly.
You know, my vision is that they'll put their kids on a bus and send them here to HBU to come tour Independence Hall.
Yeah, I believe it'll happen. Dr. Hammonds, thank you so much for
being
here.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate you, respect you so much, and look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you very much.
Here at HBU, we influence the culture around us by challenging our students to put their beliefs into action every day.